Hi, Mel.
Hi. We've
How are
texted
you?
so much, but you haven't told me how Mid-South was last weekend.
It was so good. I've been having this knee issue, which I just figured out the problem, or I think I figured out what the issue was.
Tell
So,
me more.
okay, well, first the knee problem was that I think I have a little bit of light tendonitis in my quad on my right leg, and it's been deferring pain to my knee. So I went to a physio last night. Actually, somebody in Bentonville who I raced Unbound XL with like 2 years ago. Like we were together in a group for a while. His name is Corey
Cool.
Smith. So connected with him and saw him last night. Have, you know, we did all those. Oh my gosh, we did the dry needling
Love dry
and
needling.
he
Love
put
it. The
the, you know,
release.
the e-stim on it. And I was, oh my God, literally. And he did some cupping and used the scraper. And I mean,
You got worked on.
my leg is purple, but it doesn't
But
hurt
it's
as bad
good
as it did
purple.
yesterday.
It's good purple.
So all of this to be said, I did not race Mid-South. Everyone gave me such a hard time. Sarah Storm literally said to me something like, and I was like, oh, maybe I'll do the 50. And she's like, Cynthia Carson, if you show up and do the 50 and you win, we're going to have some words. but I decided to just ride the 100 with actually old teammate Caro,
With
who lives in
Carol.
Bentonville. We had like a girls' weekend. She's got a 2-year-old.
Love.
So we, you
Love.
know, got away from Bentonville, did our girls' weekend. Ride with GPS had the DFL party, and that was super fun.
Yo,
So
we
we had
gotta, you
like,
need to like show more photos of that jacket. It's so
oh my God, the
snazzy.
jacket is so cool.
Ride with GPS, I want one too.
They're so cool. So we had that big crew for Ride with GPS there. They were sponsoring the DFL party with All Bodies on Bikes. So we had a bunch of people out on the dance floor. They had a DJ after the race. It was super fun. And I had a great time. Just kind of like an
Mid-South
industry
is
catch up. Like it was like the start of the season for gravel in
such a
the
good
US.
vibe. It's
So
such a good
good.
vibe.
I love Mid-South. It was nice also. Kara was kind of giving me a hard time about like not having something, like just as a joke, but just like I
Yeah.
was like kind of unorganized, and I was like, I gotta be so organized for my ultras. Like everything has to be so dialed. You cannot forget anything because you're like in Morocco. There's nothing
Yeah. Like you're
you
gone for
can't.
days. It's not like
Yes.
you're gonna endure for 6 hours and whatever.
So it was nice to just like kind of like, ah, it's fine. I don't have the right things I need, but I'll survive. So, but you did some power tests in like the last couple
I did
days.
a
You
power
did
test
two
really.
sets of power tests. Like you did the, which ones did you do?
So I did on Wednesday or whatever day of the week was, the first one was the high power test. So I did a 5 minute, a 1 minute, and then two like peak power, which were 12 seconds. And I did a lifetime best on my 5 minute and my 1 minute.
Woo
The 5 minute, I was a
woo.
woman possessed.
I love it.
Like I couldn't, I then he predicted the numbers. My new coach, Neil, predicted numbers based on just like the stuff that I had been doing for workouts when I got back from Morocco. And for my 5 minute, like we really had no idea what was actually under there because I really don't like to make
That's a
myself
painful
hurt
one. Oh,
very
yeah.
often. Like I have deep sores, but I'm just the bit of a wussy wuss.
Girl, that sharp pain, I am. That's why I'm an ultra racer.
Yeah, exactly. But the 5 minutes, I was just like, I had the best time. It was
I
horrible.
think
Like it
you
was
sent me a
horrible because
selfie after. Your face is
I
literally
sent
the
you a
color of
selfie
a
after all
tomato.
mine.
I love them.
So I like did a good job pacing the 5 minute. The 1 minute, I was very cooked from the 5 minute, and then the peak power was just like it was just you just go ham sandwich and you just see what you can do.
Sandwich.
So I was really, really happy with those. And then I did a 20 minute test on
Friday.
Friday. And Neil
On
was
your
like,
trainer for both of them, right?
yeah, I did them all on the trainer.
You're
And
crazy.
I'm happy I did that because of how hard I went. Like, I'll do the next series outside when it's warmer.
Oh my God, your number's going to be so much higher.
But I'll bring Jake with me to ride beside me in
That is
case
the
I fall
best.
over because I go so hard.
Yeah. Well, no, just also having someone pace you, like, what would you call
Yeah.
that? Like accountability. Like you can't
Yeah,
give
exactly. I'm glad
up.
he wasn't there when I did the 20 minute inside though, because Neil gave me
Didn't.
like, he gave me pacing guidelines. It was great advice. And so I did the first 5 minutes under, like well under, so that, you're not building up too much lactic acid or whatever that science is. And whatever. So first 5 minutes, I go out and I'm like, I feel amazing. I feel amazing. I was like, okay, I'm going to like smash this test. So the next 5 minutes, I was like, okay, you can bump it up.
And by bump it up a little bit. Don't listen to coach.
I'm sure he meant like, you know, 2 or 2 to 5 watts. That's probably what he meant.
Mm.
Your girl did 15 plus watts. So the next 7 minutes, I was like, I was hammering, and then I hit the 13 minute mark and I was like, oh, I got lightheaded. I thought I was going to vomit. I thought I was going to have to stop the test because I went too hard too early.
Mm-hmm.
I did the first 5 minutes perfectly. But anyways, I eased off for like a minute to 2 minutes. And I was like, wow, I just totally ruined my test. Like I was kind of beating myself up. And then I was like, you know what? Fuck that. Like somehow rallied and
good for you.
I was not proud. Honestly not far off of my lifetime best 20 minute
Heck
test.
Yeah.
And it, you know, Neil said something that was, he's like, one, don't compare to your old self because like training is a spectrum. And I really appreciated Truth. That. But then the other thing is he's like, it's March. And the fact that you were that close to your lifetime best that was done in July, he's like, just think about where we're going to be able to get in time for Silk Road. So that was great. And like, I'm shocked at how much I'm enjoying the structure.
That's
to
cool.
be frank.
Yeah. Honestly, I mean, so both of us are working with a coach for the first time in a while this year. We both have coaches. And yeah, I would definitely suggest if anyone's listening that working with a coach can be really helpful because it gives you structure, gives you something to do. It's not necessary though.
It's not necessary. And the other thing is, I think that like I have a very clear goal I'm working towards. Like it's, you know, I want to build up as much of a buffer against the back of the race as possible so that if shit hit the fan, I could stop for, you know, 2 days and be fine. Mm-hmm. But then the flip side of that is like, if nothing goes wrong, then I'm just going to be wicked
fast. Shred it. Yeah, exactly.
Which is exciting.
Yes.
But I think like I really did need those years of no one telling me what to do and no structure to get back to a place where I wanted to do this and I wanted to actually like make myself hurt on the bike because you have to want it and you can't just like passively. It's such a huge time investment. Anyways, yeah, we're working with coaches. We're both liking it.
We're dedicated. We've got plans and goals. Mel's got a fun bikepacking trip. Actually, we're both doing like, we're going to bikepacking events next weekend, but neither of us are actually racing them. You're going to Stagecoach to go with your fiance who is racing.
Jake is racing. Jake is racing. Our friend Mateo is racing. Another friend, Steven Schleski, is racing. It's my birthday, like a couple days after.
What? How did I not know this? Mel.
Yeah, my birthday's April 3rd.
I feel like
3rd,
a terrible friend. April 3rd.
No,
oh
no.
My God.
April 3rd. So yeah, we'll be in California till April 2nd. I'm going to go out for, I really hope it gets here in time, but I have some gear being sent to me to test.
Oh, cool.
So I'm going to go for an overnighter.
Cool.
And then I can report back more on that after I get it. But
so I'm going to Doom, but I'm signed up for Doom. But like, yeah, this whole knee situation, leg.
You're not
like,
racing.
Not racing. There's despair. Okay. So Doom, for those listening, is in Arkansas. So super close to where I am in Bentonville right now, like an hour drive. They have a shorter distance called Despair, and it's basically just
what
like
grim names, Doom and
super
Despair.
Tough riding, like some of the hardest riding that you can find in the area. And I am either going to do Despair on 2 days or just like bike pack out there and have fun while other people are doing it. So looking forward to that. But Mel, you're going to go meet actually our guest that we have on the podcast today. So Meg is the disorganizer. We find out a little bit more what that means actually when we dig into the podcast. But yeah, join us for the podcast today with Meg, a race organizer, race disorganizer for Stagecoach 400, which starts next weekend, the 29th,
Friday the 9th. March 29th. I want to say something civilized like 9 a.m.
Oh, that's so nice.
I know, right?
That's
and
amazing.
So 400
starts at a
miles,
coffee shop in Idlewild.
Yeah. There's beer, burritos, like amazing desert riding, mountain riding,
and the ocean,
creek crossing, ocean. This route has it all. I think we've already decided, you'll hear about it later, that we probably are going to do a detours tour there because it just sounds 100%. So sick. But we really wanted to have Meg on because there's so few women who organize races, and she's a total badass. So very pumped to have her on the show today.
Let's hop into the interview with her.
Yeah, let's go. Hello, hello, everybody. Meg, welcome to the show.
Thank you. So glad to have you here. Thanks for joining us today. Where are you calling in from?
I'm in San Diego, California.
Oh, we are jealous.
You know, it was tied between San Diego and Palm Desert, where my in-laws wanted to become snowbirds, and they ended up in Palm Desert. But
it's probably less expensive.
Probably they're crazy people. They're boat people. So they were like, oh, San Diego could be cool for that.
Yeah. Even the boat slips are expensive. I mean, I know some people that do that winter here, and it's not even cheap to do that.
Wow.
No, that's, I mean, crazy. To have a boat is like,
it's expensive. I would love to live on a boat, though. That would be interesting. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I just went in one recently. My friend did a long travel in a sailboat. It is a compact space. He was in there with three other people.
Three people? Oh my God.
There was three of them total. Yeah. It was
talk about a sprinter van with two people. Yeah. Can you imagine a sailboat with three? Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
That is like sardine can life.
Literally sardine can life.
Yeah. And you can't get off and walk anywhere. Like, you're just in the water. Like, what do you do?
Yeah. I think about it. I wouldn't be able to do it because, like, I wouldn't have you could bring a bike. Well, one, there wouldn't be enough room in the sardine can for a bike.
Yeah.
But then you'd like need a trainer. And I don't think I could do it.
Yeah. That'd be too much. Yeah.
Yeah. Where in San Diego are you?
I'm in Normal Heights.
Oh, okay.
You know what it is? It's kind of like uptown. Like, they're all the kind of cute neighborhoods are around Balboa Park. And so we're kind of on the north side of it.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a nice spot.
I lived in Oceanside for a year after college. Yeah, I lived in California. I went out there to be a pro cyclist.
That's awesome.
I lived 1 year was like, wow, this place is not for me. I'm from the East Coast. It was definitely a different place. But are you from California? Are you from that area?
No. I was actually born in D.C. My family's from Wisconsin.
You're born in D.C.? Hey,
yeah,
cool.
But I was Arlington. Only there for a few years. I was at Andrews Air Force Base, but my mom and dad were both in the Army. And so, they were both ER nurses in the Army at the time. And, we moved a bunch. And so, San Diego just seemed like a nice place to be as an adult. Yeah. You know, it was like, the weather's nice, everybody rides their bikes, everybody gets tattoos. You know, I'm a tattoo artist. So, it was like, I was like, that's a good place to go. Mm. And also, I lived in Texas at the time. So I was like, get me as far away from here as possible.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I feel like we're just like jumping right in. I feel like we should do a little bit more of like
a little bit of
intro. Yeah.
That's talking about boats these days, though. Just right in. So for listeners, Meg, I mean, we know that you are now the did I see this correctly that you call yourself the disorganizer of Stagecoach?
Oh, that's a good name. That's a good name. I mean, we call it a lot of things. I mean, I got this, you know, from Brendan, because there's, you know, there are a lot of reasons you don't want to be called official if you're running an unsanctioned event. We call it like non-organizer, disorganizer. That's good. Anything. Anti-organizer.
It's not the organizer. Meg, the anti-organizer of the Stagecoach 400.
For the listeners who don't know you, why don't you give us a really brief introduction? I mean, we know you live in San Diego. You're the disorganizer, whatever you want to call it, of Stagecoach 400. So tell us a little bit about how you found the bike, and then just a little bit about what Stagecoach is, and then we can kind of fill in the gaps from there.
Yeah, sounds good. I found the bike. Both of my parents were really into bikes and all sports. So we were very much sports oriented family. They split when I was pretty young, but we still kind of kept up with it on both ends. You know, like every summer I would spend with my dad, and we would do these like pretty long bike rides on the rails to trails. Like looking back at it, I'm like, were people taking their 8-year-olds on 20-mile rides to get ice cream? But he was. So, I mean, that was great. And
20 miles to get ice cream.
We would go to, we would cruise from, we lived in Hudson, Wisconsin, and we would go to this little town in Minnesota along the rails of trails to get ice cream at this spot. And I went by, I looked at it as an adult and I was like, that is a long distance.
It's a long distance. That's like probably 2 hours there and back. Like what a good outing as a kid though. So much freedom.
We would ride across the bridge and everything, across the river. It was awesome. But yeah, so did that. And then at home, like my mom was really encouraging of it for commuting and stuff like that. And I just really fell in love with it. And I moved to San Diego. I got into the Velodrome at San Diego, just kind of casually racing.
Same.
And I met all my friends through that. Everybody, like all my friends in this city have somehow, I can like bring them back to meeting somebody there. That was like the original link, you know?
That's super cool.
Yeah. And then, I got into bike touring when I was like poor and wanted to go places as a young adult, you know, because everybody thinks you have to have a lot of expensive stuff, but you really don't. You just have to pedal and be a dirt bag. And so that was the way to see. You can see everything. You know, you can see so much stuff and spend so little money doing it as long as you can afford to take the time off work. That's the thing. But, challenge. But so that kind of got, and then that eventually obviously led into, I was mountain biking, led into bikepacking. So that sort of, that was the, I guess, the path. And then, in terms of Stagecoach was the first, it wasn't the first event like that that I did necessarily, but it was the first really big, hard one. It was like the one, you know, and it's regionally, it's the big one around here. So everybody kind of knows about it, or I guess not everybody, honestly, it's still kind of like just in certain crowds. I just got this idea in my head that I was like, the first time I toured alone for just a few days, I was like, oh, this is awesome. I want to do more of this. I love riding alone. and I love riding with people too, but I love riding alone. And so somebody had mentioned it. It came up and I heard there was some tricky sections and I just wanted to do it, you know? And that was the connection to that. I have mutual friends with Brendan Collier. And so that's kind of how I got linked up with him with that.
So Brennan was the organizer for the race for the last how many years? I think 13 years before you took it over. Is that true?
Yeah, he was, I think, the first, I mean, official or whatever rollout was 2012.
Wow.
And then sometime in late 2019, he asked if I would take over, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. So as the disorganizer or the anti-organizer, we can learn what we know about Stagecoach by like looking it up on Google, looking on the, the YouTube videos that people have made. But in your own words, can you describe to us what the event is? Let us get a little deep dive into the event description.
Okay. Yeah. So it is a roughly 400-mile, probably mountain bike ride. Goes through the whole point of it was to get through, get from the mountains to the ocean into the desert in one loop. You know, that's sort of the idea of it. And, Brennan's a good Midwesterner. And when he moved out here from Chicago, he was like, wow, this is incredible. You can see all these things in one bike ride. And I think that was the originating idea for that. We do a Grand Depart every spring and people tour it all fall and early winter also. It's pretty great. I mean, you start up in Idyllwild, which I think is at 6,000 or 7,000 feet. It's pretty high.
It's pretty high.
It's pretty high.
Yeah, it's pretty high.
Cold up there. Like
it's cold.
We rode up really cold to almost Idyllwild we rode up from Palm Desert to Idyllwild in, I want to say, December or January. And it was cold up there.
It's like winter cold, like real cold, especially. And it's funny because it's the middle of Southern California, so you don't expect it. But yeah, it's a little mountain town. Yeah. It's pretty great. But so the loop goes through there. It goes down to San Diego. You have to deal with some of some people love it, but you tell me live in the city. I'm like, you have to deal with the city. You ride through the city, like a big urban center in the middle of a bikepacking race. And then out through all, we have like, really great local trails and out through all of that, back out through our local mountains, Cuyumacas, which are also high. You know, they're at like, I think, 5,000 up to 6. So then it gets cold again. And then you drop down the desert, which is sea level, and so the temperature's raised by like 30 degrees. Yeah. So then it gets hot. And you know, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of people get caught up on how much pavement there is going through San Diego. So like, oh, I'm going to bring this type of bike. But then you're in all of these like pretty rocky single track and unmaintained roads, and then like rocky Jeep roads, and then you're in sand in the desert. And so it's, and I think another cool thing about it is, yeah, there's no right bike for it. So it's kind of this like, it's like an interesting thing to plan for. It's kind of a good test, like for a lot of things. Yeah. So I think that's like part of its allure.
You're selling me on riding this route.
Like, it's so good. I'll be there next week. Should I start it?
No, I will ride. Meg and I have been texting about potential, because I want to be there to catch like Mateo and Jake and all the crazy people who are going to go obscenely fast. So I will do my, like, my little overnighter and then wake up in the middle of the night to catch some of those people.
Mel's fiance Jake is racing it, so Mel will be there actually to witness all this. And this is all that what Meg mentioned earlier is the Grand Apart. So for people that are listening, I don't know if we've mentioned this in previous podcasts, but the Grand Apart style of racing is an unofficial race. It's basically where people line up and start together, and there's some organization like route sharing and detail sharing,
and
but
track
it's
leaders.
Not and a track leaders page. So you can find that. We'll all link to all these notes in the show notes, but it's not technically a sanctioned event like some other races around the U.S. and typically that style that we see in Europe and South America. So how many people are racing it this year? Do you have like unofficially signed up?
Unofficially, 65 is kind of our limit.
65 is the limit?
So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, and I let it overfill a little bit just because so many people drop, and then I have a wait list. And I got to a lot of people on the waitlist this year.
Oh, that's cool.
It's interesting. I don't get a lot of replies off the waitlist, which is an interesting thing.
Oh,
I got a lot of replies last year when I had people email me directly to ask to be put on a waitlist. But this time I used a Google form. So I think it was a little bit more impulsive of a sign up. And it was a lot better for me to not deal with all the emails. But then I'm like, it is kind of interesting, though, that going through so many that don't write back. I'm like, yeah, about 65. I would guess probably like 55 will actually roll out.
Yeah. What's crazy is how quickly the sign up goes. Like, it is a small number of people, like to that point. But I remember, I mean, in our household, we knew Jake wanted to race it. And I think you made an Instagram post, and we like, it didn't say the day it would go live, but then we went back to 2023 and we looked for the date of when that one was announced.
Y'all are so like sneaky.
All the smart people do that.
She's going to do it on that day. And it's like, we don't know what time, but we can't. We have to be like, no plans that day because you really wanted to get into the race. So.
And I put it at a different time every year just because, I don't know, because I'm an asshole. And I don't know, but I guess it's mostly... but I'm trying to follow suit too in what Brendan did. You know, like Brendan did things in kind of a funny, like chaotically positive way. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I like that.
That's the disorganization, unsanctioned nature of it. Like, you got to keep things a little bit spicy.
Yeah, we've had people who get really bent out of shape. I mean, not as much this year, but in the past couple of years, especially post-COVID bike boom, who are just... so absolutely entitled to be able to attend the event. And it's like, you know, you can do an ITT anytime. It's a public route. You can go ride it. Like, nobody's preventing you from doing it. You know, we can only have so many people at this one start, you know, for so many reasons. But yeah, it's so funny. Some people are like, how do I have any idea when it's ever going to go up? And I'm like, you can literally go back through social media that's public and see when I posted it last year. Like, and you know what? It's, you know, big surprise, the secret. I'm going to probably do it the same way next year. Like, it's not that crazy. Yeah, but that's funny. I'm glad you guys did that.
I love it. I mean, like, we're the kind of crazy internet people that do things like that. But it's not so crazy because it pays off. So
it's not. Mm-hmm. And those are the type of skills that people should have if they're going to do an event like this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not a little bit crazy of sleuthing, you know?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Trust those people that if they can sleuth it, they can figure out the route and the resupply.
Yeah, absolutely. And get themselves out of a situation instead of wondering what the heck to do.
Yeah, because I mean, we don't, when we for the Grand Depart, we don't, you know, send out a ride with GPS link or anything. We send it, I send it just a GPX file. And so people have to, bare minimum, be able to put that into some sort of app, like Ride with GPS or something, you know? And some people are like, what do you do with this? And I'm like, you should figure that out. I mean, there'd be much harder problems ahead for you if you can't figure that out. So yeah, but I feel like that makes it to where, you know, a lot of the resupply, oh, we give out cues to the people doing the Grand Depart.
Cool.
Yeah. And they're really detailed.
That's really cool.
So you can look at them and see where a lot of stuff is, but you have to go, you have to look at it, and then you have to upload the GPX, and you have to look at a map to see where, at what mileage point they are. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that, at least then they have to look at the map and kind of see where stuff is. You know, they can see where it is elevation wise and whatnot. But it's still, I mean, like, I know you guys would absolutely do your homework, but there are people who go into this and they're blind. And I'm like, how do you see?
I have been that person.
I was
though.
Like, what did you do, girl?
But I wouldn't do my homework.
To your credit, Cynthia, I feel like you would do some because you would do some. You wouldn't like do crazy amount of detail, but like we have been spoiled in the events that we've opted to do, like Nelson, who puts on the mountain races, gives you like a 40-page manual, and there's like every, you know, there's safety stuff in there, and there's a, like a sheet full of resupply. Obviously, there's more stuff available out there than what he lists, but you know, like if you wanted to fly blind on one of his races, not recommended, but you totally could. Whereas like, I just like wouldn't, I guess, like from a perspective of like, you know, it's California, it's, you know, it goes through an urban center. People may just think it's not actually that wild, but from the way you've described it, it sounds pretty gnarly.
There's parts where they're very gnarly, or, you know, long gaps without cell reception and
what's
places
the
are
longest
inaccessible.
Gap without resupply, do you know, or off the top of your head?
Yeah, there are two, resupply meaning, I'm going to say water,
yeah,
I guess,
that could
or
be
like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, honestly, water, the biggest gaps with water are, it depends if you sleep in the desert or not. Of course, it always depends if you sleep, right? So if you sleep, the gaps will be longer time-wise. There's like about a 6-ish average hour time gap between two different desert sections. If you move at a good pace the whole way through them, that'd be less long for people who are faster. But those are also sections that could be like in the high 90s, you know?
Oh,
so,
yeah. So you have to manage water for sure. Okay.
What's 90s in 90, non-freedom?
30 C, 32, 30, yeah,
really
like
hot.
29 C or something.
Okay,
yeah.
That's hot. That's
stink.
That's proper
and
desert
really,
vibes.
And really arid. Yeah, proper. It's a proper desert. Like, you know, yeah, it's, and so.
32
yeah,
C.
Like,
32 C.
Yeah.
Yeah. The desert heat is, it's such a dry
heat. It's so
heat
hot.
That
oh my
it
God.
Just like, it sucks the, like, it just, you get so crusty so fast. Whereas, like,
you do. Yeah.
I don't know, living beside the ocean when it's 30 degrees, like, it's very different.
It's a whole different thing. Yeah. From, the feeling of that sun just like baking into your skin.
Yeah. Yeah. And then for the people that sleep out there, you know, it's like, that's just the pure, the riding time. And that's at an average speed. I mean, definitely people that are, That's like maybe how long it would take me to get across it. But yeah, so yeah, there's probably two stretches like that. Those stretches, one of them, there's a lot of Jeep traffic, like a lot of off-road traffic. And the other one is just the one, Mel, that you're going to go into, you're not going to see anybody.
Yes.
So that's the other thing. So if you go there, I mean, that's the other thing is like, you could be back there. If you don't have everything, then you're screwed. You know,
yeah,
you could get in trouble.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I'm only going for one night, but I'm going to bring my inReach mainly so that I can text Jake to know how fast he's actually moving.
Yeah. Don't want to miss him at the finish.
Because I won't have service. Yep. So if he's having a bad ride, then maybe I'll stay out for two nights. But also, like, looking at the route, it is like they're like being out of service and just like what happens, you know, like you should have a little bit more than you need. So.
How many times have you gone out and done the full route yourself, Meg?
Full route? Let's see. 19. 4? So this will be the 5th?
Crazy. Well, yeah, you're going to do it as this year? You're going out yourself? Oh, I love that. Heck yes. The race disorganizer going out and doing
it's
it.
It's kind of nice because I'm just like, no, all right, nobody can email me. Nobody can text me. Bye. See you guys later.
See you later.
You know, it's sort of the point, right? Like a lot of people will. And I've noticed, so one year I well, last year I didn't do it. I just needed a break. We opened up a new business and it was a lot and I really just couldn't do all of it. Actually, it was the year before. I just finished and there were still people writing and people do ask you for help if you're around. Yeah. I mean, so I feel like when you are out there still writing, like nobody can ask you for anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Kind of nice.
I can't imagine that I put on a race, which is much different than what you are doing here. But I can't imagine like going out and doing it. But it's a totally different thing. Like Grand Apart, you know, everything is different between my 60-mile gravel race and this 400-mile bikepacking event in the mountains. But it, you know, still same thing. It's cool that you can do that. I really appreciate that. When you took it over from Brandon in 2019. When you had that conversation, was it his idea? Was it your idea? How did this come about? How did you all make this connection?
It was his idea. So he and I became friends, I think, just at the right time. I think he was kind of passively looking for somebody to take over. And because the first time I wrote it was 2019 in full. You know, it's like I live essentially on the route. So I write parts of it all the time, but I'd never ridden the full loop until 2019. And I feel like the pre-COVID years are a blur. I think it was 2019. We have mutual friends from the Midwest who we've all moved out here. Some of us didn't know each other there, but you know, we all kind of find each other. And we were camping together, you know, in groups over the course of that year. And I was like, oh, this guy's kind of interested me. I wonder what's going on. I'm like, why is he so interested? And then I realized, I was like, oh, he's trying to like figure it out. Like, is this the right person? You know? And then he called me one day and he was just like, hey, what do you think? And I was like, yeah. I mean, I was obsessed with the route and it was a really good time. It was really just a good time for me and a good time for him. He's got two young boys and he's trying to be a good dad. And I think he just was like, I got to do it. But he wanted it to be to somebody who was younger than him. I'm not very much younger than him, but younger. I said preferably a woman or just not a man. Sorry, guys. But you know, he just wanted it to somebody who was maybe a little different, a little bit like new eyes on the route and like somebody that would give a different perspective and that people would listen to in a different way. Yeah.
Yeah. That's I'm so glad that that's the rationale and like learning that. And then you're like, you see both of us nodding our heads. I mean, the first reason we wanted to have you on is there are so few races put on by women, whether or not you've designed the route or you're hosting a Grand Apart or it's, you know, a more sanctioned style event. There's just so few events that we know of when like we're learning about more and more and more as we like call for people to tell us about them. But to have one like effectively in my backyard and one of the biggest ones in the US organized by a woman is really cool. And one of our main motivations for having you. So glad that Brendan kind of did his weird interest in you.
Thank you, Brendan.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, he's a good guy.
That's so cool.
I mean, he definitely backed me up and supported me and always does through like anything with organizing it, because you know, as you guys know, there are barriers to being a woman or being anybody who's, you know, underrepresented. There are barriers, and so he's used whatever power he's got to be very helpful for that on my end.
That's amazing.
That's really cool.
I'm curious what was the experience like hosting your first Grand Apart versus now you've got a few under your belt. You're riding it, so obviously you're a bit more relaxed about the whole thing.
From the first one, the biggest one with the first one. So it was 2020, and our rollout was like a week before everybody realized that we were shutting down for COVID.
Whoa.
So we still did it because it was literally the day we had our the night before was when people were talking about maybe a shutdown, but everybody was already there. We're all in Idaho.
Yeah.
And we're like, what do we do?
I was at a race also. And so they were like, what do we do? I don't know. Yeah. This is such a, what do you do?
And we decided just to do it. I called all the smallest store resupplies and they were like, yeah, come through. I mean, you know, cause they're all small rural businesses. And they were like, well, nothing's happening yet, you know? And so that was a tricky year. For me, the trickiest part of it really was that people started asking me questions that year. So that year was sort of like, I would say more of like a partnership between Brennan and I. He definitely was, he set the emails, but I redid all the cues and like, you know, like I did some of the updating. I called everybody, checked on business hours, talked to all the owners. And then, so yeah, he like basically put me to work doing some of the things that I would have to know how to do. But then when we got up there, he was great. He talked to everybody. But yeah, it was just people were starting to ask me questions, you know, trying to be respectful, like, oh, I'm going to ask Meg because, you know, she's going to be the one taking over. And they'd be like, oh, what do you know about this trail at this section and, you know, whatever? And is it going to be open? And you know how you normally turn left here, but there's like that sign. And I'm like, I have no idea like what you're talking about, because I wasn't that familiar with the route. Like I had raced it one time and I had ridden sections of it, you know, often, but closer to me, not near Idlewild. And so like when we lined up in 2020, I lined up facing the wrong direction, because in 2019, we started in San Diego. Like that was, yeah. And so I was like, I don't even know. And Brendan literally put his hands on my shoulders and was like, Meg, this way. The other way. And I was like, oh my God. And I was like, I've never started in Idlewild before. Like, I wasn't even familiar really. I got turned around and down. Yeah, that's pretty funny. So yeah, I feel like that was kind of the harder stuff early on, is that anytime anybody asked me a question, I had to do research. Whereas now when anybody asks me a question and it's like, I just, it's all like a gridded map in my head and I can just answer, you know? And, but at first that part was a little tricky, and definitely trying to, also being a woman, make sure that people thought that I knew what I was doing, you know, and not look like a clueless person or not the right person to take over. Cause I knew I was the right person, but there was just so much to learn. So like getting past that and feeling confident about it, and then having people have confidence in me. So that was probably the biggest change from then to now, is that now I feel a lot more confident and it's a lot easier. It's a lot easier just to do it. And people just listen, which is great. People like, they trust me. So
I could imagine that part of feeling confident in all of that would also just be like really knowing the route. I feel the same way as a race director. Like, I know my route so well. Like, I know every single thing about it. And for you, that route is really, really long. And each year,
that's a huge, like, route.
do you make changes? Like, are there like things, and it sounded like from what we did in some of the research that there are some people that go out and help you scout the route before, because it's so big. Like, you can't just be like, today I'm going to go and ride the route, you know?
For sure. Yeah. We don't make usually no major changes. But in the, over the past, there have been changes, I think, to the route every year, but they've been fairly minor, you know, or they've like equaled out. Sometimes we have issues with Southern California. The soil drainage is like non-existent, and we have some clay. And so if it rains a lot, we have to reroute off of a lot of single track, because you just can't ride it. I mean, it'll just be like peanut butter mud. And so.
And then it ruins the trail at that point too, right? So you have to send people off of it, because you would be ruining the trail.
Yeah. I mean, imagine sending like 60 bike packers with heavy bikes like across like a really sensitive trail system. It's like, absolutely. Yeah. And so, so we do make changes for that kind of stuff. And yeah, for the. I mean, even up till just last week, two people actually messaged me about a small trail closure because of erosion. It's on the route, but it's like a really easy thing for people to figure out. So I just sent it in the last email to everybody on the Grand Apart. I'm like, by the way, a mile, whatever, 100 or something, and, you know, figure it out. It's like 1 mile on pavement. Like, you can figure it out. I'm not making another GPX. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's like, but people do kind of pitch in from all over, which is nice. Like, people will just go ride it just on their normal day rides from all over the corners of the region. And they'll be like, hey, I just rode this today. It's running really good. Or, hey, I just rode this today. And there's a new business. You know, somebody was like, oh, I found a 24-hour donut shop that's right on route. I'm like, great. Let's
what? Have
that. You know,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Just, 24 hours. Yeah. That's so helpful.
Yeah. So it's cool.
That's amazing that people are able to, that people help you out with that. Do you have like a master map when you're like getting ready for the race, where you like highlight where somebody has said like things are running good? And maybe if there's like a section you haven't seen, do you go out and ride it yourself? Is this something you do every year to just make sure the whole route is like basically quote unquote okay?
I think so. For the most part, there are only a few sections that are not popularly written. So like the sections that are popularly written or that are just going to be okay. Like they're dirt roads that people live off of. And so, you know, that they're going to be maintained, you know, they'll be all right. There are some things up in Idyllwild, but the locals up there, including Brendan, kind of helped me with that. And one of the local stuff around here, I mean, it's Southern California. It's so heavily populated. Like if people let me know, something changes. But also, so out in the desert, the stuff that you're going to ride, Mel, through Coyote Canyon, like that's not ridden very much. Like the only people that go through there are stagecoach people. That's it.
Cool.
And so, and then like the Willows is a section that's a creek for about a mile, maybe a mile and a half now.
Oh, I've seen videos of this. Yeah. Like people kind of straddling the sides of the bank going through.
It's, like... it's really cool. Like, I mean, it sucks if you go through there at night and all the fast people go through there at night. But but in the daytime, it's usually hot. So then you get there in the daytime and you're like, oh, there's like shade and I'm in the water. Like it's usually nice. But that section, that's the only section that I really deliberately try to go scout. And I usually go out once in like November and then usually once in, like January, February. And just make sure if there's been any big storms, if it's still passable, and to see if the track changed, because if there's been any flash flooding, it pushes a bunch of sand into it, which is interesting. It fills it so that it's less wet. When it hasn't been raining, the sand erodes away and it becomes this like deep creek. So if there have been big storms and it pushes all the sand into it, the water kind of reroutes. And so then the track changes just a little. And usually people can figure it out, but sometimes... like we get like dams that get created in there and you have to go just with, we have a little mini chainsaw. We just like clear it. Yeah.
Little mini chainsaw. So, I love
that. Yeah. But that's the only part that I really, really specifically go look at. Cause I feel like it would be terrible if you were like, you know, like touring from out of town or from out of country or something, or like, you know, we have a lot of like older couples that come do it, you know, retired people and so, you know, friends. And, but yeah, it would be tricky. So, or if you're solo, you know, and you get there and there's a bunch of like trees damming up a place that's in the middle of nowhere. It's But otherwise it all kind of keeps itself running.
Just sounds like an amazing route. I think I read somewhere that someone asked you whether or not you'd prefer to race or tour it. And I think you said tour it. But I could have read that wrong. I just love the note of that you don't always have to be racing to enjoy a route and to tour it. Yeah. Like you said, touring can be inexpensive. You don't need the fanciest things. Like we live in a society. Oh, sorry, I'm going to start quoting George Costanza. we live in a society that is so focused on like the next fancy thing, selling you the thing. Whereas like going back to the root of it, you could just strap a dry bag or anything to your bike and go. And obviously you need the time off work, but you could just go.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think that the reasons to promote touring the route are that there are so many cool things on the route to do. I mean, especially if you're not from here, which most of the people that tour, a lot of them are not from this area. So, I mean, first of all, San Diego, a lot of them start in San Diego. That's a great place to start because you can fly in, park at the airport or something. And there's San Diego. So you get the beach and the ocean and like all this good food and stuff. I mean, there's so many things to do in San Diego. And then you go out to the mountains and there's like little lodges you can stay in. There's really good single track. You could like stay in a lodge and go do a single track ride and then go on the next day if you wanted. In the desert, there's hot springs at Agua Caliente that none of the racers ever stop at.
What?
It's an awesome campground. Yeah, it's like an inexpensive, awesome campground. Some people do. But there's that. Fish Creek washes the first desert stretch, and it's just gorgeous. There's mud caves you can go explore. Like, it's very safe. You can leave your bike out. Just walk in. And, well, it's not safe. I mean, I don't want to say it's safe in the mud caves, but it is generally safe. You don't have to worry about your bike so much in those areas. Like, the mud caves are actually really unstable, and so I should say you should be careful. And then Borrego Springs, I mean, all the whole area is just full of cool stuff to do. So I feel like touring it, you definitely could get, you know, the point of the route being to see the mountains and the ocean and the desert. And I think the tagline that Brendan had written, it was like, to celebrate that and the diversity of culture along the route. And if you tour it, you could really do all those things.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
Yeah. And then if you race it, you can just live on like four burritos for the whole time.
That's amazing.
So it's like,
I'd be all right with that too.
benefits to both, you know? There's benefits to both.
I actually almost toured it. I was planning on touring it in 2021, but there was so much snow that year. Like, I think it was like a huge amount. It was the year that like everything from COVID was kind of like, you know, people were finally coming out. And I was actually going to go with two of my teammates at the time, and we were going to do it together and like tour it. But we ended up, because of the snow, we went to Death Valley instead, which was fun. Getting to experience that area was awesome. But yeah, I really want to go back. I've definitely, it's on my long list of things because I live in San Diego. So I'm like, oh, I could go visit friends and then see all of the, and I also wasn't a mountain biker when I lived there really. So I'm like, all of this stuff that you're talking about, I'm just like drooling, like I would love to do some of that.
November or December. I feel like November or December, like the things about the fall that are not as good as the spring is sometimes you can get some pretty bad wind. But I mean, like around here, like in the winter, we're in the desert like all the time. The only tricky thing is, you know, at the mountains is pretty cold. So, and you get snowy. Yeah. But I mean, if you can pick one of those times, like in late November, I mean, it's a great time to tour it.
Now, you want to go tour?
Yeah,
it
I was going to say this might be my sayonara to North America. Right.
Yeah.
That would be so fun. I know.
Detours takes on Stagecoach 400.
Oh, do it.
We would have plenty of detours.
I come join you guys.
So this is what I want to know, Meg.
Please join us.
Oh, 100%. So because racing, it sounds like an amazing experience, but what I'm hearing is the route is just so good. It's worth taking the time.
Yeah, definitely.
If you could plan like your ideal number of days to ride the route in, like big days, but you know, you're not doing anything crazy like riding into the night all the time. And I mean, unless you make a grave error, but what's your like ideal number of days?
I mean, I would say like for me, ideally, let's say starting in Idyllwild. Because I guess it is like the official way the route goes, because it is nice to start and end in this little mountain town. The only negative about starting and ending in San Diego is it's a huge urban center.
So
it doesn't feel
after you've had
awesome
like this...
when you finish, right? Yeah, you're just kind of like, okay, great, I'm in a huge city and there are a million people, I'm in downtown. But if you're up in Idyllwild, it's nice. It's a nice, quiet start. We start at Alpaca Coffee, and so you get your breakfast. And I would probably go from there to Lake Henshaw. They have cabins and camping. I think that's maybe 60 or 70 miles. And then the next day I would probably just go to San Diego, get a hotel or something. Cause camping's pretty tricky in San Diego. I'd say that's the place to get a room. And then next day, maybe get out to like just at the base of the mountains. There's another campground, Matarawa, at the base of Viejas Grade. That'd be a good place to camp. Cause you could, be an alpine, get burritos, have some beer, whatever. Next day, it'd be if the weather's good, you could stay in the Cuyamacas, or you could just get a boat room, drop into the desert, because then it's like a lot warmer. So Agua Caliente, let's say that, hot springs. And then I would spend another day in the desert, like maybe Borrego Springs, or like resupply in Borrego Springs, and then just cruise just out of town and camp in Coyote Canyon before the Willows. So you do the Willows the next day when you're and have not sleep with like wet feet and stuff. So I mean, it sounds like, and the next day you can get up to Idyllwild. That's a big day for some people, but there's not, you could go to Bailey's Cabin. It'd be cool to camp at Bailey's Cabin. So I'd say 6 or 7 days. Yeah, probably 6. Yeah.
And of all of those days, what's your favorite day or section of the route? Hard to choose, but if you could pick one.
My favorite section would probably be, And I love the Cuyamacas because it's like good single track. And then you get to do the Oriflame Descent, which is like this rocky Jeep trail that goes down in the desert. That's probably one of my favorite parts. But the section between Agua Caliente and Bailey's Cabin. So the desert stretch is probably my favorite.
Cool.
Yeah, it's like the slowest moving, I think. A lot of people look at it. It's not very much mileage wise, but it's just a lot. You know, it's just rough, rugged terrain. And so it just takes a long time. A lot of people, I think, really underestimate that section just in terms of the timing. Like, oh, it's going to be like 20 miles. it's like 6 hours later. They're like, it took me 6 hours to do 20 miles. I'm like, well, yeah. I mean, there are other things you can look on Track Leaders and see how long it takes people to do it. You know,
yeah, people like, don't do that.
Yeah,
people
you could just like look at somebody who you relate to and be like, oh, I ride as fast as this person usually. And then just like look at their history. This is a big tip for anybody who doesn't know you can do that. It is like the easiest way to figure out how long a section might take you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love very good. I love that. It's so
I didn't know that was a thing until getting ready for Atlas, actually.
I thought you were going to say just now.
No.
That's awesome. But it's so nice to have reference points to know how long something's going to take. I mean, I heard beer and burritos and I was sold on whatever day that was. Yep. I was like, sign me up for that one. I mean, sign me up for all Alpine. Them, but explicitly that one.
Yeah, you can get a burrito. I mean, it's funny. We have like these places all throughout the route where people love the burritos from certain places. And I feel like that's another thing people talk about with this route is like your resupply can just be burritos. I mean, it depends on like what your stomach can handle. Everybody around here can probably just eat burritos the whole time because we probably just already do. But
the SoCal burritos are so, I mean, you could go anywhere and get a good burrito. I mean, like everywhere makes a good burrito. So yeah, good.
What
I
makes
mean,
them I, so I can, good yeah. there?
Like, oh, the tortillas are good. And
yes, they're like,
they're made by people who have been like making great forever their whole lives.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
Their families have. And so I feel like it's just like generational knowledge.
And they're usually really affordable and they're usually really huge. Yeah. I used to ride home from like the big ride on Sunday when I lived there. I would like ride up the one or the 101 and I would always get a burrito at Colima's is what it was called in Encinitas. And I mean, it was so fat and I would put it in my middle pocket and like ride home with it and just like sit on my porch. You could see the ocean and I would just eat the burrito in just
That's
like completely
dream.
Broken.
They're like
human.
The size of a bike water bottle.
Huge. Huge.
Like
I never thought
bottle.
About it. I guess you could put it in your bottle cage too.
You totally could, yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's awesome.
Who needs water when you have burritos?
Yeah, just burritos.
Who needs water? What is the, where's the best place to get a burrito on the route?
I think Gilberto's in Borrego Springs. Because at that point, you've gotten about two-thirds of the way through the route. Maybe even, probably two-thirds, like, timing-wise, or three-quarters of the way. And you're like fully in the zone of bikepacking, you know, and then you pull up to this place that's like really busy and cash only in the middle of the desert. And they're just like just slinging the best Mexican food ever. And it's so good. I feel like everybody goes there and there's just have like a yard sale across us poor people, like across all their like tables outside. You know, there's just like gallons of water everywhere and just food
drink
everywhere.
Mix everywhere.
Yeah.
One time I
miscommunicated with the person at the register and I didn't like, and I was too tired to realize like the price difference, I guess, but like, cause I bought like a burrito. I usually get a burrito for there and a burrito to go. And instead I got a burrito and then I got rolled tacos cause it just sounded nice to have there. But she gave me 25 instead of five. So I was like, oh my God. And I was like, this is so heavy. And I go outside, I open it, and I was like, wow. But I was surrounded by other riders. And there were this guy, Adam, and was riding with his son, and his son was like Quinn. It's probably his late 20s. And big guy. And I was like, Quinn, you want to help me with these? And he's like, yep. And he and I ate like probably almost all of them.
She probably wasn't even surprised because of all the cyclists. But can you imagine just being that one person going and buying 25 rolled tacos?
I know, right? Yeah, that was me. I was that person. Yeah.
It's a good person to be. It's a good person to be. I'm trying to decide whether or not we want to drop this episode before people start racing so they can get all the good nuggets of information or
you should. That'd be awesome.
All right.
Yeah,
we'll
they got
to
know where the burritos are.
We'll
they
drop
must
it
know.
Before the race.
No rush, but yeah, that'd be cool.
I mean, burritos, beer, amazing single track. I'm sold. I understand why it's popular, but like you as the organizer, why do you think like the Grand Depart sells out within 2 hours? I mean, you don't have to pay for it, but or do you have to pay? You have to pay for track leaders.
No, I have them send donations to advocacy groups. Yeah, so it's like a minimum $30, and then they have to just forward me a donation receipt.
And then there's also the sideshow, which I want to know more about, like what the sideshow actually is. But like, why do you think the event and the route have become so popular, aside from all the amazing things you've already listed?
Because it's good. It's like a really good route. You know, it's like it's got the things that are, I think, some of the harder things for people, depending on how you look at it. Let's say the pavement is hard. All the mountain bikers are like, oh my God, there's all this pavement. But by the time you get there, you know, it's nice. You just pump your tires up a little harder and just roll on all this pavement. And you get that ocean view. It's so good. And then, you know, so it doesn't really become something you don't like. And then when you, you know, a lot of times people are not looking forward to the sand, but then the mountain bikers with bigger tires love it. But then also you have these views. And so, and then when you like get through these sections that are so hard, you feel so accomplished, you know? So I feel like each of the, it's like, yeah, it's like, it's a hard ride, but then there's so much, you get so much out of it. And I think that because there's also not the right bike for the whole route, even though if I, you know, I would say most people ride hardtails. But yeah, I feel like, I mean, I could tell you what I think the right bike is. I
think what do you think the right bike is?
I think a full suspension XC bike that you can fully lock out is like ideal. That's what I'm fortunate to have one in the last couple of years. I've ridden it. It's like the best because you have some suspension, helps with all that cumulative fatigue, but then it just locks out. And I just put my tires like rock hard for the road section in San Diego. And then, yeah, after that, let the air out and just, it's great. But yeah, I think that's why I think it's so popular is because there's so many different choices you can make with it, you know? And so I think all the planning is really fun and it feels like really accomplishing when you've done it.
Hmm. Yeah. What tire width is your preference?
I run 2.35s or 2.4s, okay. You know, whatever. I think what I have, Ardent Race. I have Ardent Race tires on there. I think Recons are a great tire for the route. Ardent Race, Recon, Icons. I think everybody loves Icons. So like a fast rolling XC tire. Yeah. And I think like for touring, I would say run a bigger tire. You know, because if you're touring, like, whatever, like, you'd rather be having fun in the desert rather than just, like, pushing as fast as you can over the sand. Oh, my cat's here.
Yes.
Yes.
Hello. It's not a requisite to be a cat lover to be on the podcast, but it's welcome.
It's welcomed. Yes.
What's your kitty cat's name?
My name's Izzy.
Hi, Izzy.
She's about to turn 16.
Wow.
So she's old an baby. Old girl.
Oh my goodness. She's so happy to be with you. Oh, before we hopped on the call, she was asleep. You showed me her just like snoozing in her little bed. Mm. So sweet.
Oh, we could make the whole show about cats, but we won't. We won't. Oh. I'm just glad you're a cat person, Meg.
Yeah.
Wait, your Instagram handle is Speed Meow. Why?
It is, yeah.
Oh my God, it's Speed Meow. Oh
yeah, I have, I'm a tattoo artist. There's a kind of, you know, they're kind of traditional classic tattoos, you know, like think like sailor tattoos. There's one, it's like it's called Speed Skull. It's a little skull and he's wearing goggles and it says Speed across. Kind of like old motorcycle theme kind of thing. But I have one of those on my inner ankle and on the other ankle, I have one that's like a cat skull and it says Meow.
Oh my God.
And then, yeah. And I was like, I'm going to make myself a personal Instagram account that's not like a work account, you know, because I have one for work. And I'm just like sitting there and I'm like, I don't know what the name's going to be. And I just like look down, it just says Speed Meow. I was like, okay, that's what it's going to be.
Perfection. So it's all,
yeah, that's perfect. That's all I love that. Yeah.
That's so perfect.
Mm. So you plan Stagecoach, but then you also work a full time job. How much time would you say that you end up spending on planning the event and, you know, the communication and all of that? I mean, a rough estimate, I'm sure it's hard to quantify.
Yeah. I mean, my partner would say too much as he's being very patient and quiet in the other room right now. But yeah, I think, no, he's really great. He's really supportive. You know, I guess starting last year, because I do have some control over my schedule, I started blocking time off each week and not working full time during end of February and into March, because it just gets to be so many things. So basically, like one of my work days, I just cut in half. I go in late one day, work two full days, and I leave early on the last day or something like that. And I found that helps because I just try to cram in all of, you know, so much, like just so many emails to answer. And also communication, like you were talking about with all the sponsor stuff. And it is just like, you know, for years, like there's so many things to do and they are so time consuming. I mean, like 3 hours will go by in the morning and I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. And I feel like I've gotten so much done, but I'm still not done.
Yes, you know, we always say our to-do lists are literally never finished.
Never
like
ending.
You have a to-do list and it just like cross out one thing, add
fingers
15.
Fingers in a bucket with a million new holes.
Yeah, I just move it when I don't finish it in one day. I just put it on my calendar and I just drag it to the next day. And then I'm like, well, hopefully I'll just like get done tomorrow, you know? But yeah, it's definitely a lot. And it is mostly communication. I think a lot of people would guess that organizing the route, that scouting or making sure that the route itself is good, but that's really the least difficult part of all of it. I think it's a lot of just like the communication part is so time consuming if you want to do it in a way that makes it nice for people to do the route.
Yeah, it makes it people like feel supported and ready to go. You know, so many random questions, I'm sure. I can't even imagine like yeah. things that people ask you.
What's the funniest thing someone has asked you?
Oh.
She's like, you don't even want to know.
Or no, most ridiculous said, request.
I somebody asked me for it. People have asked different versions of this question, but I don't want to make, I doubt this person would listen to this. But somebody reached out and they were from out of country and they wanted to know if they could do the route on their townie and if there were many rocks on the trails. And I was like, it was a legitimate question because yeah. not only did they email me, but they also posted somewhere public about it. And I was like, oh, girl, no.
Probably not a good idea.
I mean, oh, hell yeah for wanting to do it. But yeah. did you, was your response like, bad
idea?
Like,
bad idea. Yeah. Because like, I'm all for like, ride what you got. And, you know, like you sign up bike touring, you know, it doesn't have to be expensive. You don't have to have super nice stuff. But you should also not be inadequately prepared in a situation that could put yourself at danger or search and rescue at danger or setting yourself up to need to get bailed out by somebody. Like, I feel like that's just really like irresponsible and kind of childish. You know, it's like be an adult about it. Like, educate yourself enough that you're not going to be a burden on others so that you can actually enjoy yourself. And the other thing is you want to enjoy it. Like,
yeah, it's
I do get a lot of questions. I think one of the most commonly asked questions, which I think is a silly question. I'm going to say that to everybody. I'm sorry. The people who have asked me this.
I love it.
Should I ride my gravel bike or my mountain bike?
Oh.
You should ride your mountain bike.
Oh.
And you can do whatever you want. But like, do you want to have fun? Like, do you want to enjoy pedaling on the trails? And I get it. There's some people who are much more skilled than others and like who absolutely can ride like almost everything on the gravel bike. And like, that's great. But like those people, I'm not as worried about. I'm more worried about, you know, just like average Joe who wants to ride his gravel bike that he bought in 2020. And it's maybe not even set up tubeless yet. And it just, and you know, those types of situations, it's like, well, you know, if you're going to try to enjoy it, I would definitely say you'd probably want to ride at least a little bigger tires, and suspension really doesn't hurt.
Yeah. I mean, in the long run, it's not even just like being comfortable. It's actually like preventing future issues. I mean, Mel and I can both tell you we've, and I'm sure Meg, you too, we've dealt with nerve damage from long-term, stuff from events. And it's like, if you ride a gravel bike, your potential for nerve damage is probably a lot higher if you don't have suspension, you know? I can't imagine doing stagecoach without
rigid bikes are out for me. Unless I'm on the road, I think I'm not even old, but I just think my body is not down to not have
you're setting yourself up for long-term success rather than like being able to do it for such a short amount of time.
Right. It's like, yeah, it's like if your only bike is like a rigid bike and you really want to go do it, absolutely go do it. But then you just really do have to consider all of those things. You have to consider what you're doing to your body, what risk you're putting yourself in, there's so many factors, but you know. Yeah, I think also, you know, not having a problem in a place that requires search and rescue or somebody have to take care of you or like Park Service, because those are things that put the route and the at risk of existence. You know what I mean? So that's like another thing when I say those, I'm not really truly anti-gravel bike, but it's just all those things. Or people go out and they don't have shelters, or they're like, I'm not bringing a tent, or and then there's rain in the forecast or whatever. All the things. And I'm like, just consider when you make these really personal choices, yes, you can do whatever you want, but they reflect on other people. And so, and like the reason we can keep doing it is because we don't, because we haven't had problems with the sororities in the last years, you know? Mm-hmm.
Touch wood. Well, I think you kind of touched on, you know, one of the things about the unsanctioned nature of it, but like, there's so many more layers of complexity when you become a sanctioned event. I mean, I know from like my experience looking at potentially putting something on in British Columbia, like we have logging roads. It's just like virtually impossible to get the approvals you need without it, without the insurance and everything costing so much money. But like, will Stagecoach always be unsanctioned? And was the rationale really for like those kind of logistical reasons, or what's the rationale for keeping it unsanctioned?
Yeah, I think the rationale for keeping it unsanctioned is just that it's like a type of bikepacking race, like Colorado Trail, Arizona Trail race, you know, and it's that type. It's free. I mean, yes, there's a donation, but it doesn't go to me, you know. It's and I think it's just the least people can do. A lot of people donate extra, which is cool. But yeah, and it's just so it's accessible, right? Like it doesn't really cost money to get in. And yeah, and you don't have to get permits for the entire thing. It, you know, for our region, we don't have just one national forest area to get through. We've got like, I think we have like national forests, we have state parkland, we have native land, we have counties, parks, we have, I mean, there are like 10 different jurisdictions that we would have to deal with. It would be impossible. So the rat will never be sanctioned. So we always have to be careful. And then at the same time, for all those different sections, actually somebody just emailed me asking about getting in contact to get permits and insurance. And I was just like, it's just not going to happen.
Where I have my event, we have like, if we had 75 people or less, we could not get permits. And that's because of the national forests, the George Washington National Forest. There are a couple other grand apart. We have the Trans Virginia that goes through Virginia, and they have a 75 person limit because of that. So you said 65. I'm curious, is it a 65 or is it 75? And then you just kind of bring it down to 65. Like, where did that number come in?
I don't actually deeply know. That number is the number that a lot of different races that are just like this one follow.
Interesting.
Yeah, a lot of the smaller unsanctioned bikepacking. I think it's because over 65 is considered an event, but maybe that's West Coast.
Maybe, yeah.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure. I know that, a bunch of different ones. I mean, Arizona Trail, Colorado Trail for sure.
There are 65.
I want to say 60 or 65. Yeah, I know AZT, I think he caps it at 60
now.
How the
heck are so many people able to do the Tour Divide? Because isn't Tour Divide also
technically unsanctioned? I
don't know. Probably that one's... because it starts in Canada. I mean, I can't imagine. Like once you get to the US, it's like free, you know, it's a free for all. Everyone's separated too.
That's it. That's actually because there's even a smaller number that I'm not going to say. There's even a smaller number that's allowed to the state parks. And so that's actually why we don't do the route clockwise. Because if you did it clockwise, where all of us are in the desert at first, and that is a state park. And so, and 10 years ago, Brennan actually did get contacted by people because people were bailing in the desert because it was hot. And they were like, oh, Ranger, I don't know what to do. I'm so hot. Please help. Here's Brendan's contact info. He told me to do this. It's called this thing. And so
And so
that's like now, you know, at the pre-race meeting and stuff, I'm just like, all right, everybody, like, here's the deal. Like, if you meet somebody official, you're on a bike ride with your friends, you know, and that's like really important to not say that it's an official thing because it could just end it. And it could end up with a situation like, I mean, it's a little different, but like Cocopelli Trail and like just have everybody be ITT only. You know, I mean, that would be a way if something really ever did happen, you could just be like, oh, it's ITT only. So it's all literally just individuals registering. So you could still have it. But it is nice to be able to have kind of the big get together and stuff beforehand.
So when you're doing you're letting people in, you've got a wait list. Maybe it was this last year was the first year you did it because so many people want to do it. You have what's called the sideshow. Was last year the first year or was it the second year?
Last year was the first year. And that was Brendan's idea because I think after a couple years of, you know, getting to breathe and focus on his family stuff, he was like, man, you know, it'd be kind of fun to do to help out and be part of it again. And he's like, what if I did a separate rollout like the week before? We call it a sideshow. And that was a great idea. And so we did that, and it was great. It was just to help with some of the number of people that wanted to get on the Grand Depart. And I'll be honest, I don't know. I think the people that want on the Grand Depart really just want on to say that they're racing. So I'm not sure how many people of the new people were pulled over from that, but it pulled over mostly really seasoned people who had ridden Stagecoach a few times, or locals who were like, yeah, you know, I've done it and I don't really want the race vibe, or like, you know, maybe I want to see the other direction, because Sideshow we do like in a figure eight. So it's mostly clockwise. The big loop is clockwise. Stagecoach is like two. It's like a little loop on the top and then a big loop on the bottom. So, so I think it actually drew in like a really interesting group of people that way. I think we had like 20, because we actually had a registration this year. Brennan's out of town during both weekends. And so I said, yeah, I'll do it, but it's going to be fully self-organized, you know? So like, I still sent them out like 3 emails or something and told them what they should probably do. But yeah, it's definitely just more, I have really no idea how many people are going to be there. I'm guessing maybe like 10, which would be great. I know of 5 that will be there. My partner Peter is going to be up there. Like, yeah, so it'll be fun. And yeah, it just gives people like a different perspective on it. And I think that they also, a lot of them, you know, they'll stop and have a drink at the Iron Door Bar. And they'll, like we all did last year, it was like 9 p.m. We were all at the Iron Door Bar. It was great. There were, I think, 10 of us there. And then you cruise into the desert and go camp. And the next day, a bunch of people went to Agua Caliente and went to the hot springs. So I hope that that would like encourage people to at least do more of the touristy things on the route.
That's a good addition and a good way to encourage that maybe more touring mode, which we've kind of like talked about, the 7-day type thing. And then you could show back up at the start and watch everybody go off, which would be pretty cool.
I thought
cool.
You were going to say, yeah,
do it again. I mean.
Oh, man. You know, actually, I should throw this out there. I don't think anybody's yo-yo at the route.
Oh, still time. Fun. There's still time. Listening. Someone still could time. Do it this year.
Well, know, the sideshow starting on Saturday. Yeah.
Friday. On Friday. The 22nd. Friday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
I know. Maybe one year could get my friend Lindsay Shepherd to come out here and yo-yo it on single speed. That's her thing.
That would be like, crazy.
People who race single speed are mind-blowing.
They are.
Mind-blowing.
Truly.
And yo-yoing it on a single speed. That sounds like my personal hell or something. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it would be really, really wonderful. If all I had was a single speed, yeah, I would do it for sure. But I like gears. I like to be able to ride more technical trail and not have to walk it, I guess.
For sure. Yeah.
And I feel like you kind of alluded to like the most challenging part is the communication, but I would also imagine just making sure that people are good citizens riding the route, because you don't want to like ruin a good thing, right?
Totally. I think the most challenging thing is truly just keeping it possible year to year. And that's like really is putting, you have to put out enough that people really understand and that they're prepared to make good choices that reflect on the route and on the community. And that's where, you know, because there's some schools of thought where you could be like really hands off and just be like, well, I'm not organizing this. And like, this is all your choice. And the more and more people that are doing it, you know, it's like it only takes one person to really, really not understand to ruin a good thing. And so, yeah. And I think that with that boom in 2020, it brought in a lot of people who really didn't know any of, you know, back in the day, it would be a lot of people who did a bunch of different unsanctioned bikepacking races. And they're really familiar with like the guidelines and the rules and all this stuff. But then that brought in a whole new group of individuals. And I feel like it became necessary you have to say more, like you have to organize more and like really make sure people understand like what's going on, or people that had only ever ridden large sanctioned events, you know, and be like, hey, this is really different. Like, there's also nobody is going to be there at the finish line. Like, there is not a finish line. They're going to get up into Idlewild and you're going to be like, oh, I'm tired and cold and nobody's here and I forgot to book a room. I guess I'll go sleep in my car. Like, you know, it's just not going to be like I don't know, but that's like what's so cool about it. And so, yeah. And then 2021, I don't know if you guys knew this, but 2021, we just set a date, like, because everything was closed all 2020. And we set a date, or I set a date, I guess. And I was like, well, I guess maybe this day. And about a few weeks before everything opened up, everything had already kind of opened, but a bunch of the national forest land was still closed. And it was like just a month before everything just fully lifted and fully opened. So we actually didn't skip a year.
Oh, that's cool. Wow.
Yeah. Whoa. Which I think is what brought so many people. Also. Yeah.
Yeah. Super cool.
It's so cool to hear the distinction between like an unsanctioned and sanctioned event. But I do laugh that like, Meg, you wouldn't even believe the number of times people finish in the middle of the night and no one is there, even at like a big event like Atlas or, or Silk Road, because it, I mean, it's...
Because it's 3 a.m.
Yeah, so no one who's awake. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
My friend Hannah and I tried to catch our friend Theo. We'd been like, she finished like several hours earlier and we've been greeting people. We set an alarm and we slept through the alarm in the middle of the night. And we saw him the next morning. And we're like, we're so sorry.
That's okay.
We meant to come greet you. It just was the middle of the night.
Yeah. And they probably didn't expect it.
Yeah. Yeah. You
know? This last race was the first time I ever finished of all the races I've done in the middle of the day. Every other race has been in the nighttime. Yeah, it was like, it was weird though, because normally it's nighttime and it's like, I can go right to bed. But this time I didn't go to bed. I like was doing things and being social, but I was like just not existing at the same time.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was there were people there actually, which never really happens for me either, but it was really cool.
It's cool. There's people there.
When there are people there, it's super fun. You're like, oh my God,
it's
we just did some sick shit.
We're there to be excited with. You can get some food and like, I feel like that's nighttime. It's weird. I finished Stagecoach once at 3 a.m.
Ooh, and like, what a terrible time.
Yeah. Yeah. We were like wet from the willows. And like just one of my buddies had like plastic bags like strapped around his feet. It was just so cold because it's probably in the 20s, which I don't know what that is, but it's like below freezing. And like as we were coming, like the valley is before you climb up in Idyllwild. It was actually probably warmer in Idyllwild. There's like this valley at the bottom.
The inversion thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were cruising through that and it's like a slight downhill and we were just like, oh my God, it's so cold. But yeah, it's definitely nicer to finish in the daytime.
100%. Okay, before we get to this or that, where are the willows on the course? And I kind of want to ride them. I kind of want to ride it. But
you should.
Kinda like,
you should, because you, I mean, I think that you have time to, and I can send you like a little edited GPX that'll get you there into the desert a little faster. But I think that you'd have time to get past them. Why not? I mean, or just go explore them the next day. Like if you camped at Bailey's and you could just go a little further the next day and go check them out.
Yeah, and then go back the other way.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. They are, I mean, they're in the middle of Coyote Canyon. They're in between Borrego Springs and Anza, but they're in the middle of Coyote Canyon.
I'm so excited about this to experience it. And like, I've seen the videos. I hope that the weather over the next week stays nice because it's been...
I hope so too.
Like, I think I saw a tiny bit of rain up in Idyllwild, but like, only 1.5 days and not that much.
Yeah, and Idyllwild can handle rain. Like it's pretty sandy soil up there, so it can handle it. I'm so nervous. We don't want snow. I guess I felt so bad last year. I didn't ride, so I was like, yes. But like they had to hike through like 3 miles of snow to get out of Idyllwild. Ooh. And everybody, it's funny, everybody from like Idaho, Montana, Colorado, Canada, they're all like, yeah, whatever, you know, because they're all coming from winter, and so they're like,
whatever.
And they all like waterproof socks and stuff, they're fine. And then like everybody from California is like, this is the worst thing I've ever done. I've never experienced such pain and trauma. And I was like, you're fine. Definitely not great. Like I didn't want to do that, but like I couldn't send it on the highway because it was frozen.
Oh,
you know. And so I was totally frozen. And then the fire road just would have put them on the highway earlier.
Mm.
And it was also covered in snow. So it's like, as well take the single track walk it.
Sometimes you got to pay to play. And sometimes it's a bad, bad thing you got to pay for.
Yep.
Are you going to ride the route this year, Meg?
I am, yeah.
Okay, cool.
I'm excited. Yeah, I'll do the Grand Depart. I don't know. The fastest I've done it, I finished at, I don't know. It was like a little over 2.5 days, just under 3 days. So that's like what, middle of the night, Sunday night. I would love to finish like Sunday Eve, like by midnight. I would love to. I just don't know.
What's your favorite kind of beer?
Oh, my favorite kind of beer.
Do you like a beer at the finish line? What's your favorite thing to have at the finish line?
Maybe it's just something that's not super hoppy. Makes my allergies.
Mm.
Yeah, like a pale ale or like a lager, anything like that. Is good.
Oh, yeah.
Pilsner. I like some basic beer. Like
please Modelo. Don't finish.
I was, literally, I was going to say, yeah. Please buy her a Modelo.
I like that. Modelos I like anything.
Modelos are really
Modelo.
Good.
I love a Modelo.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
Mel's going to show up with like a 12 pack and just start handing them out to everybody.
Yes.
Getting a beer at the finish line is the best. And so good. Yeah, I also owe Mateo a full beer at a finish line because I didn't have time to buy a beer for him before he got to the finish line at Atlas. And so I was like drinking one and I gave him like mine, but I didn't realize how little was left in it. And he's like,
just like Mel's backwash.
Like, exactly. He's awesome. Like, thank you so much for this beer. It's horrible. What is it?
That was awesome. Yeah, I think I'm starting to think of where, like, in town. I mean, because I have the route kind of starting and ending at the at the coffee shop at Alpaca Coffee, but they have like plenty of parking and space to hang out, and like they seem really cool. I mean, probably hang out there and wait for people to finish.
I love it. I love finish line vibes. Fun. So yeah. Fun.
Mel's gonna bring the party, actually.
Yeah, that'll be fun. It's fun. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea when I'll finish. I don't really have my rough plan. A goal would be really cool to finish by midnight. But then also, if I don't, or if there's bad weather, I'm gonna sleep at Bailey's cabin, like full night sleep, and I'm gonna finish on Monday.
Yeah, you
after
should.
Sleeping.
Sounds nice. Because you don't need to finish in the middle of the night.
You also want to enjoy it too, right?
Like nope. I finished in the middle of the night before, and I can check that off the list. So I'll either finish before that, or I'll just sleep and then finish the next day.
All right. Shall we do some this or that and wrap it up?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll go first.
Okay.
Touring or racing? It's a question for you, Meg. Sorry.
Oh, I don't know. I'm so in the middle on that. I mean, I would say touring, but yeah, touring. Racing's fun, but racing's like special. I would say definitely touring if I had a choice.
I think we already know the answer to this one, but desert or mountains?
Oh, I mean, I don't know. On the stagecoach route, I like the desert.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Generally speaking, though, I would probably, the mountains are where I would go to
mm-hmm.
ride.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Same. Yeah, I'm a mountain fan for mm-hmm. sure.
Like big trees, dirt.
I love trees. Yes.
Yeah. I like trees in the daylight, but if you send me there at night, I'll freak out.
That's true. Where the desert at night is like magical and not
amazing.
Scary.
Not scary. Like, you could
not
like
scary
like
all.
The night can be as long as it wants to be, and I'm vibing. You send me into the forest in the middle of the night, and I will go crazy.
I feel like I'm getting a hug. All the trees are just like hugging on me, and they're loving on me. That's how I feel
at night.
Yes, like a nice little like gentle hug.
I'm always like, I feel like in the forest and the mountains, though, there's just like they're predators.
Yeah, right? Exactly. There's apex predators. There's
okay,
so
I'm from the East Coast. We just have like little black bears. There aren't really that many predators, so I'm not scared.
It's different out here.
Yeah.
It's different. Where the I mean, not to scare everybody again, but the Cuyumacas, I think, are one of the largest population of mountain lions, like in this whole region.
Scary. I was like,
But I saw a cougar. I don't know how related they are to mountain lions, but it was still.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it was the size of a small vehicle.
Whoa.
It was terrifying.
I just saw an article yesterday that this group of women were out on a bike packing or like on a bike ride, literally, and a cougar came
stopped
out
them?
And attacked one of the women.
No.
And they literally uh-uh. in yes, uh-uh. for 45 minutes, they had to, the woman, or maybe it was 15 minutes, I think is what the article said, but the women, all of them, like, it had latched onto one and, like, was on top of one of the women.
Where was this, Cynthia?
They fought
I forget exactly. They fought off the bear, off the, not the bear, they fought off the cougar. Like, they were dropping, like, massive rocks on,
wow.
I mean, literally. When
terrifying.
I could not even imagine. Sorry to change either. The vibe there,
yeah, where,
but, like.
Yeah, where was that?
Oh, I forget exactly where it was.
I'm gonna
you can't just drop this knowledge on us that this horrific thing has happened. And, like, yeah, but I don't know where.
I read the article yesterday. I, like, blocked that out. I blocked out where it was.
That's so funny. That's what you're supposed to do, though. Yes. They say that, like, that if you just, like, punch and hit and kick mm-hmm. them, that at some point they're going to be like, oh, this isn't food. It's not worth it. Because yes. they don't want to get hurt.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, they were, like, they were literally said they were picking up boulders that they could almost not carry and then dropping on top of the animal. I'm like, that wow. is crazy. And there was a group of them trying to get it off
I
just the one
this.
Woman. Like,
I hate
this. That's
every
scary.
Every. So they're like scary. They're so cute in photos, but they're the most fucking horrifying cat
I know they're
on
so
the planet
scary.
Super scary. I mean, so like, we don't have those on the East Coast, so I'm not usually scared, but I guess I guess I understand where you guys are a
we
little
get
bit
those.
Scared of the trees.
Yeah, I mean, that being said, that like there's I mean they really it's supposed to be one of the biggest concentrations of their population out here, but
wow.
I've actually never seen one, but I see well, their well I've seen
wanna,
one in Utah
you don't want to see them
no and but in like in the all through our route I mean there are prints everywhere
yep.
like
Big
on
cat.
The whole route huge cat prints everywhere all through the desert also like a lot of people they're not I don't want to scare about this either but there's cat prints out in Coyote Canyon by the willows and
oh,
like
Meg,
I
mean,
I was like I'm not going
that?
To the willows
no,
anymore
don't worry, we're not going anymore
oh last time I was there I saw a really cute fox
oh
came out and just like said hi yeah that's what
like
that's
foxes.
All you'll see it's a fox
okay.
and my friend saw an eagle out there
oh
like
cool.
a big golden eagle like out in Coyote Canyon eating on a deer carcass
oh.
so you'll see cooler stuff no cats
okay yeah. I don't want to see the cats though
okay
no. I mean
okay,
the thing
back
is
to this
that
or that
you,
yeah,
yeah
sorry.
Forget about the cats okay favorite ride food it can't be a burrito because we already know you love those
my favorite ride food I mean I like salami and cheese I would say during a race, God, I've gone full tailwind. I mean, not like everything, but I love that stuff for racing.
What flavor?
I can't
it's
do it anymore.
I like the naked flavor.
Oh,
which is the non-flavored one because it just tastes like lightly sugary water.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I feel like out of all the food I'm bringing now, the other food is just for like to have some solid food. But mm-hmm. If I can't say burrito, because truly, like during Stagecoach, there's always a burrito in my bag, or at least half of one.
Okay, so it's burrito and tailwind.
A burrito and
burritos
tailwind.
And tailwind. Yeah, that's it.
I
that's
feel like
secret.
That's Tailwind's new marketing ploy.
It is.
Burritos and
tailwind. Burrito and tailwind. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so burrito or beer.
Hot burrito.
Yeah, I like a beer. And I'll drink a beer during your race.
Yeah. Okay, so if you had to pick, if someone was to hand you a burrito at the finish or a beer at the finish, what
Which
would you
Which is
choose?
Going in your mouth first?
Beer.
Fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I feel like
you've already
end,
had
my
all
stomach
the
is just like yeah. you know and I just want like liquid yeah
yeah all the liquids music or no music while you're riding
I listen to music I didn't used to and I don't know when it like finally clicked to me that it was helpful but it's so nice like within the last couple of years I was like oh yeah I could listen to music and yeah so I listen to music and sometimes podcasts but yeah usually music.
Do you have a place that is a bucket list ride area somewhere in the U.S. in the world close to home that you haven't done yet?
Yeah, I feel like I always go back to Utah, different parts of Utah that I haven't been. But I feel like I've ridden a bunch of Utah, but I'd like to ride some more of the Pacific Northwest. And I'd also like to get up to, I'm spacing up in BC, where everybody mountain bikes.
Vancouver,
Squamish,
Whistler. I would love to go for a ride Whistler. I mean, not bikepacking,
same.
But yeah, I have
to.
Like two different friend groups that go there every summer. And they spend like a month there riding, and I'm just like, God.
Well,
because
there's
like,
the bike, there's bike park, and there's also like
yeah.
really great riding non-assisted. There's one
yeah.
alpine ride that that is only open for like a month because it's so it goes up to 2,000 meters and which is like I don't know what 5,000 6,000 but it's
yeah.
snowy up in the alpine until quite late
yeah.
also it has like you have to be careful with grizzly season so they only open this route but it's amazing you go up into the high alpine it's a really
yeah.
long climb and then the descent I can't really ride the descent because I'm a shitty mountain biker well maybe I could ride it now
sure
but...
not
Okay, but the blues and blacks here are lies. They're lies.
I've heard that it's totally off.
It's
yeah.
not true.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's a blue descent. No, it's a double black diamond
yeah.
descent. It's not
yeah.
a blue descent.
That's what I've heard. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I want to go there. That's what I want to do.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, you'd love it. Okay, all the credit to Cynthia for this question, but have you ever given someone a tattoo to commemorate their Stagecoach experience?
I have.
Yes.
Really?
I have.
Yeah, I love
it. This, Josh Waldrop lives in, I think, Alabama or Deep South somewhere. But yeah, I did Stagecoach this, I think, 2021. And I had drawn like the design for a patch. And I'm like, if anybody wants it as a finisher tattoo, I'll do it for like below the shop minimum. And yeah, and he came and got it.
That's so rad.
Yeah. And a lot of people say that they want to get it, but then they don't end up like, I've definitely tattooed Stagecoachers like after the race. It's usually just other stuff.
Other things. Okay.
But yeah, but if anybody wants that design, like, yeah, let me know.
That's super cool.
I usually save Wednesday after, like, whatever the Wednesday is after the Grand Depart. And I save it for if anybody from the Grand Depart wants to get tattooed. Also, because then I can kind of ease back into work. And, like, if I'm tattooing people, it's also people who are, like, really tired and want to talk about bikes.
It's an easy conversation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Just like this conversation has been. So wonderful so to chat with you, Meg.
Yeah, thanks.
I wish you the best luck with everything. I know. I'm jealous. You guys are going to have a good time.
Yeah.
Enjoy the Modelo. Pretend I'm standing there cheersing you with the Modelo at the end.
Yeah. Well, congratulations to you too, Cynthia.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks so much.
Just rips it up. Awesome. But now it sounds like we have to do a detours tour.
Honestly, I would totally do it. Yeah, I would 100% do it.
Yeah,
yes. Right. Cynthia, let's work on the calendars.
Yeah, plenty of beers and burritos. And we are 100% stopping at the hot springs. Like, that is
100%
have to. No excuses.
Yeah.
Okay. Wonderful.
Unreal. Well,
amazing.
Thanks, Meg. So much, Meg.
Good luck
this
with everything. Have fun y'all next weekend.
Yeah, sounds good.
Cheers.
Thanks, y'all.
Bye.
Bye.